Welcome, Photon Warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
Oh, hey, welcome back to the Movies Hate You show. I am Rob, and this is my show. Well, it's our show, Todd, wouldn't you say? I think it's our show, Todd. I think you're enough a part of this show to say it's our show. But don't ever say it's the Todd Sheets show.
I would never do that.
No, thank you.
I don't even say that about my own show.
I would say it's part of this show belongs to Mr. Ree, the wonderful, beautiful Lee Peterson with us tonight, I hope. Are you there, sir?
I'm here. I thought it was my show.
The work here is that you are vying for your own show, trying to step on like so many others have done on Jackalope, trying to kind of ride on my fame and get your own show. And you and Todd are secretly working on that behind my back. That's the work.
So secretly, you're the Petticoat Junction, I think, of radio, right? I mean.
I think we said that last show when I continue to take the credit for Leah Love's new show, Erotic Rhetoric, that airs on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, which I have to say, last episode of Leah Love's show, I was honored to be a guest on the show where I had my sexual tarot cards read on the air by a tarot card reader. And Mr. Ryu missed it.
Oh, like I don't know already what your sexual.
Did you know Todd had his cards read on the air? He doesn't want to talk about this. He doesn't want anybody back tuning to this thing. But he's already getting IMs about it.
What, you're a nut?
You did. You had your cards read, man. What did it say about us, Todd?
It said that you were my stalker and I should run from you.
It said that at some point in 2012, we were going to wind up in the same bedroom together.
It's probably because of, you know...
Neither one of us was happy about that.
Well, you were kind of thrilled, but I personally thought, let's hope it's just at a convention and we have no choice.
I was only thrilled to further my career at Jackalope and to move up the slots. Like, you know, when you go to the Jackalope homepage, and if you haven't, you should, and you scroll down to the shows, you kind of get like halfway down to get to the Movies Hate You section. I kind of want to get... a little bit up there, you know? I want to bypass the whole, like, listenership BS aspect of it. So, that's the only reason I would ever be interested. But, you know, anyway. Do you want to hear the Todd Sheets VHS report, Mr. Ree?
I can't wait.
Mr. Ree, can I first read your sexual tarot cards on the air?
I'd love you to.
Okay, here we go. Let me set these up. And yes, you are homosexual. There, done with your sexual tarot cards.
Everyone knows. Wow, that was fast.
Hey, I'm one of the fastest readers on the East Coast.
Wow, so a lot of queens in my cards.
A lot of queens in your deck, man, and not too many death cards, but a few queens and a couple upside down jacks.
Oh yeah, those are the days.
Yes, yeah,
I remember those days well.
Exactly.
I didn't remember the name Jack, but if you're saying it's Jack, then sure.
Exactly. And for the quick, we have a special guest tonight. And before we get to that, and before we get to your two-hour movie reviews, Mr. Ree, which we'll do at the end of the show, and you're sure to send us over our limit, There's still a used copy of The Shivers on Amazon for $999.99. That's
hey,
kind of all.
Don't
that's
we
kind
have
of
to talk to our guest tonight?
It's kind of, well, here he goes with the producer bit. Steering Rob back on path. Oh, what a captain you are. I know we have a guest, and we're going to get to
our
guest. Yeah. But no, my thing is, you sold, this is really cool, man. Seriously. And you have to take the credit for this. You're 13 years old. You're making these shot on video. What year is this, man? These shot on video horror films. What year? Give me 13.
Man, I was shooting on Super 8 then.
1975? I mean, what,
oh,
when you were 13?
No. Well,
give me, help me out here, man. I can only guess.
I was quite young.
No, what year was it, though?
It was like about 80, 81, man.
All right, so look, at you're selling movies that you shot on Super 8. You're 13 years old. I mean, that's impressive, man. People should know that about you. I'm going to write a book about you. Mr. Ree, write that down in the notes.
Do you have a pen?
There might be one in the studio somewhere. Geeks. What would Mr. Ree be considered in radio jargon, Todd? Is he a foil or a sidekick or just a hanger-on? What would be his proper radio title?
Soon to be host, if you don't quit rambling on.
Ah, if he doesn't answer that phone, he'll be fired. Get that phone. It's probably the delivery.
Like a silent partner, silent host.
He's a silent partner. I like that.
Well, if you're talking, he is a silent partner. Jeez.
Oh, yes, we have a guest. By the way, this is the Movies Hate You show. A show sometimes about movies and sometimes about hate and sometimes about you. Did you guys like that one? We're sponsored by bmovie.com, b-movie.com. Mr. Ree has his films there. You should buy them. And Todd Sheets as well. And a bunch of other people who don't matter as much as those two, but their films are up there. And you can buy these DVDs for money that you earn at your job, and then you can help support this show so that we come back at you every week and annoy the hell out of you. And if you want to email us, you can get us at movieshateyou@gmail.com. But now, the moment everyone's been waiting for, especially our guest who's been sitting there patiently, this is someone from my past who I've worked with before.
And he still talks to you.
And he still talks to me. And he is a creative jack of all trades. He's a DJ, a filmmaker, a gamer, a musician, an artist, a collector, a wrestling buff. He's the first person to turn me on to extreme Japanese, like, tack wrestling back in the 90s. We met through a princess that was once in my life. Introduced us. And I won't mention her name, but with us tonight, she doesn't matter. With us tonight is Ken Lucas from the website Unwinnable. And that's unwinnable.com. And it's exactly what you think it is. Life is unwinnable. And that's what it's all about. Actually, it's about video games and all kinds of stuff. Movies, comics, toys, music, technology. Total geekdom. And here he is to represent. Come on. Ken, say something.
Thanks, Rob. That's like the best intro I think I've ever had. I might have to cut that from my personal cell phone.
And tonight's an off night. You come together,
tonight's
come back.
Off night.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, this is this sounds like a fun show too. I listen to it. Movies Hate You.
Mr. Ree has fun. He likes it.
Quite a cast of characters.
What is your favorite episode of Movies Hate You?
I've only heard pretty much the last four.
So if you had to pick a favorite, I'm quizzing him because I don't know if he's really listened, dear viewer or listener. I'm just letting you know that this is where I call him out. I'm listening right now. Hold on, guys. Hold on a second. I'm going to go listen to it. Hold on.
Yeah. Let me get my iPod. Hold on.
Oh, the one where you had that guest on, that was hilarious. I love that one, man. The one where you guys were talking for like an hour, dude. That was crazy.
Yeah, that episode was awesome.
Awesome, dude. Hey, we're not here to talk about this show. We're here to talk about Unwinnable. Can you tell us what Unwinnable.com is?
Unwinnable.com, we are a video game and, dare I say, after hearing your rant, Geek Culture website. And we're not your typical video game review site. Everybody has quite an interesting perspective and take, and we combine a lot of talk about nostalgia and stuff from our childhood. So we're not just giving people, like, you know, we like this game, we hate this game. We actually usually go against the grain and get called out on for it, because we don't post what maybe EGM or some other big site would post. So it's a fun site.
But it reminds me of IGN or something like that, where but like a darker side almost, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to say darker, yeah, but...
You know, the site is made up of... it's like half the people on the site are actual writers. They write for well-known newspapers, publications, and you know, they all have an interesting perspective, and the other half is literally like punk rockers. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, so it's great that it's not like stacked with geek, you know.
Yeah,
although there might be a little bit of geek in everyone, it's not stacked with total like obsessive nerddom, which is nothing gets under my skin more.
Yeah, no, I mean, we all obsess about different things: music, movies, gaming, comics, all that fun stuff. Toys. I'm the toy guy. I will be at Toy Fair again this year, and
toys rule.
I do a lot of the toy articles, if not most of them, and there are a few other people that talk about toys, but that's my thing. I love toys.
You did a piece called Toys of the Dead, and it was were toys inspired by, you know, death, not death, but, you know, gruesome topics.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. It was kind of like, I don't want to say, you know, Tim Burton-esque, but you did stuff like the Steve Jobs doll that's coming out, that's inspired obviously by his death, which may or may not be authorized. I think it's unauthorized, isn't
it? It's not coming out.
They pulled it.
Yeah, because Apple filed a huge cease and desist. So,
why do they own the likeness of Steve Jobs?
They claim they do. So originally, the toy company said, "Hey, we're gonna we'll pull the Apple devices out of the toy because you probably own the likenesses to that." And then Apple's like, "You know what? We own the likeness to Jobs too." So,
wouldn't it be great if they came out with it, but they put like a droid in his hand, you know, or a BlackBerry or something? You know,
that'd be great.
And then give them, you know, they could do like a 70s Steve Jobs and maybe get away with it, call it like hippie computer programmer guy.
Yeah, if it wasn't so blatantly Steve Jobs, I mean, that's how a lot of these Hong Kong companies get off making productions of actors that aren't licensed, is that they, you know, it's a slightly off version, it has a different name.
I have to say one, and I collected this stuff for a while, but there's just too much stuff to collect and too much stuff to get into, so I trimmed it out of my life. But one of my favorite things to collect, I would say about, you know, 5-10 years ago, was cheap knockoffs, like superhero stuff at like dollar stores and Mexican parts of town, and these like, you get
Chinatown,
you get this like pack of like 20 figures, and it would be like 4 Spider-Mans with all different paint jobs, but all totally whack. Like,
totally different body parts.
Yeah. And like, or like super deformed giant Spider-Man. They are like hollow, cheap Mexican street plastic.
Yeah, because all these countries would buy the old toy molds. Like Kenner and Hasbro would actually sell the molds. So they'd all repress all the toys and just, you know, go nuts.
But the best is like the names, you know, like Spider Guy or something. You know, it would always be like, you know, Voltron becomes, you know, Voltro. It's amazing. Like, I want to see like an investigative piece on this. Like, I mean, maybe there is one where somebody goes into one of these factories, finds out like how these things are, like, from the creative process behind this. How does, like, who's sitting in the room saying, "All right, we're going to call this guy, you know, Robo Police Guy instead of RoboCop or whatever." You know, like, but it's just a little bit off.
It is.
Is there anyone else collecting this stuff? Is there a website I can go look at all these knockoffs?
You know, I used to buy knockoffs too, and like, I used to cash in San Francisco Chinatown, and I only used to do it because they were absurd. They were just absolutely, you're right, the names were
ridiculous. It's like Spider-Man's got like a yellow costume on with like...
Yeah, or it would be like Venom painted as Spider-Man or...
Yeah.
Parts. Yeah.
It's all, it was all...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump on you.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I see stuff like that all the time in 99 cent stores, and there'll be maybe a mixture of a couple of different, obviously not licensed characters. Is it because they don't... I mean, the other day I saw like some toy or a dinner plate or something that had Pokemon and Winnie the Pooh on it, both, like on the same plate. Is that because they see these logos and they know they're popular, but they don't know they're not connected, so they just throw everything in one, on one plate? Is there some thought behind it?
I think most of the time is that all this stuff is produced there. Like, that's the big thing with, to get on, just say in tech talk, they produce mass amounts of bootleg iPod-looking tablets in China and all those countries because that's where the real iPods are produced, so they have access to this stuff. So I think that's part of it is because they have access, because we make it there. They figure, we'll just, print off a whole bunch of Winnie the Pooh Pokemon plates and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
Make money.
I just think I like that Pokemon versus Winnie the Pooh. Like in those like superhero packs, it's like you've got Spider-Man and then you've got Batman. It's like DC and Marvel teaming up in these packs, and the person making it probably has no idea. The people behind it, they're just they got the mold, and it's like, oh, I think that's Batman. Okay, let's make this guy Batman, and like the Thing or something. It's like the Spider-Man body, but it's painted like the Thing. It's beautiful. It really is. It is this little kind of sliver of culture that is just sitting there in front of all of us, and no one bothers with it, And the only people buying it is somebody who can't afford the real thing. And I'm sure for a kid, the imagination. I mean, when we were kids, I'm sure we all played with rocks and made them into something exciting. So it doesn't matter to a kid. It matters to us because we have our kind of preconceived notions of who should be who and what color outfit. Oh, this is a 90s Spider-Man. This is not a current Spider-Man and blah, blah, blah. But I think totally. It's great. Todd, do you have any knockoff? Todd, by the way, Ken, is a huge Batman guy.
That's cool.
Huge collector. I mean, he's, he dresses like Batman and does like, car washes and stuff. I mean, he's out of his mind. Do you have any knockoff Batman stuff, Todd, you want to discuss?
I have tons of it. I have a huge Batman collection. One of my favorite knockoffs actually was an import toy, and it may have even been licensed. It's pretty damn... It looks pretty real, but it's like a Mego version of the Michael Keaton Batman. And Mego is like my favorite action figure line from the 70s that had the world's greatest superheroes. And they have like a Mego version of the Michael Keaton Batman. And it's like got Mexican writing everywhere. It's all in Spanish. It's from Mexico, it says. But it looks, and it's actually a pretty durable figure. I had to get a couple of those and hang on to them because I like them so much.
That's killer. Now, do you actually go to Mexico to do this, or do you get this stuff online?
I go to toy shows when I can because I kind of like toy shows. It's one thing to look online, but what makes me mad is you got these Joes on eBay who will buy up stuff. Even now, like the Bat Cycle came out from Hot Wheels a few months ago, and this guy literally bought 90 of them. And every time you buy one, it's the same guy from Kansas City, and I like... threatened his life at Target, and I've never seen him again. But it was like, really, it had to get that bad because it's got.
Wait a minute. Well, can't the guy just make a buck if that's how?
The hell with that bastard! No one needs 99 of those. I need one for 99 cents, and he's buying them up and charging me $20. And there should be a law against scalping. That's all there is.
It's capitalism.
Bull crap. It's assholeism, and we need to take that guy out.
There are some guys who go to Mexico and supposedly on the streets or even near the border. You can just buy this stuff.
I did.
You're right.
And I have been to Mexico, and I have found things. I found Star Wars figures and Batman and Robin, and I found a Superman figure that's hilarious because he's painted like Captain Planet or some awful thing, and Batman's painted red. But they're awesome because they're like actually kind of cool figures, and you're like, how the hell are you doing this? In one of them, they had Darth Vader and Superman in the same set, and Darth Vader had the Superman cape on.
That's so awesome, man.
It's like, what are you? It was like $3 for a pack of these. It's like crazy.
That is the best thing I've ever heard of. Now, do these things have value?
Just like, to me.
I don't know. No, I'm saying if you were to put them on eBay or something, you know, are there collectors?
Like Ultraman. I found Ultraman Mexican knockoffs on the border. It was great.
Oh, man. And what about wrestling knockoffs, Mr. Ree? Have you found any of that at the dollar store?
Every wrestler's a knockoff, aren't they? Oh, sorry.
Hey, whoa. Fighting words. I have, actually. You know, I have a son who's 11 and way into wrestling. And he and me and my daughter go to 99 cent stores. It's kind of a thing we like to do. And we've seen these box sets of like three or four figures, and they're definitely taken from the real mold, but they're kind of mix and match. So you've got Batista's head on the Undertaker's body, and they're just crazy. And my son, of course, knows every little, you know, he knows every detail. So he just pointed them out. He said, "Oh, that's, you know, that's the Mattel series 10 Undertaker," because, you know, he knows every little detail about it. So I don't know how that stuff works. I mean, why are they mix and match? Why aren't they, aren't they just knockoffs of the figures and look at that?
I think because whoever is behind all this, and I'm sure it's, you know, several companies or people, whatever, they're brilliant because they know it doesn't matter. It only matters to us in our adult geekiness to say, oh, that's Batista's head on blah, blah, blah's body. You know, to a kid, it's almost like, oh, wow, Batista's dressed like Kane. It almost adds to the story. It adds to the, why is Batman dressed in Superman's costume? Well, then they can come up with some scenario in their head how they switch roles to solve some crime or something. I don't, you know, it's really cool to me, and it's really creative, inspiring, I think, too, if you put yourself in a kid's place with this stuff. And I wish we had it, you know, I wish I had it when I was a kid.
We kind of had it. I mean, I think
just add a dimension. We did.
ShopRite and all had the cheap figures.
I remember like cheap knockoffs of like
they weren't remolds of like, you know, Toy Biz toys.
No, but it was more like kind of, you know, second tier toys. They weren't really. They would have their own, like when Star Wars came out, there were tons of like, you know, Star Warped or Star whatever, you know, Star Battles, and it was all these little like army men refigured with like swords, so they look like little space figures, but they had their own brand. These are actually being sold as the real deal.
Yeah.
Like they're bootleg, they're fake, they're illegal, whatever they are. And they're adding to the canon of these characters' stories, as you know, or brands, as far as I'm concerned, which is cool. It brings up a cool thing. It'd be like somebody remaking, you know, The Godfather on their own terms, without getting permission to do it or whatever, and adding stuff to it that adds to the legend of that story. I don't know. It just there's something very kind of cool and open and free, creative about it. That it, you know, I hope it continues to exist. You know, SOPA has no bearing on toys, right, Mr. Ree?
I have not read the entire bill. I'd have to. I suspect they might. I don't know. You know, it's also a little heartbreaking for me to see the cheap toys. I mean, they're cool on one hand, but we all know that kids can be really cruel, and they're going to pick on you for no reason or for any reason. And to think that a kid kind of settles for a cheap knockoff toy, and you know, he doesn't know any better until his quote unquote peers start making fun of him for it. I find that a little heartbreaking. I don't know, maybe I'm too sensitive.
Well, yeah, I can see that. I mean, if you brought the toys to school, yeah, that could happen.
You know, the cheap Barbie dolls that look enough like Barbie at a distance, but then you realize their arms don't move, and you know they're really, really cheap.
Are you implying that geekdom begins at a very young age?
Well, I don't know if I am. Maybe.
Hmm. Well, you are listening, Mr. Ree. You're listening to the Movies Hate You show, and you're part of it. Yeah. Sponsored by bmovie.com, where you can't buy any knockoff toys, but you can buy DVDs. Our guest tonight is Ken Lucas. He is the sent messenger and representative of unwinnable.com, video games and geek culture. And we're kind of talking about toys and games and nothing. We're not talking about movies, though, but we're talking about characters who might have been in a movie, the toy version. And Ken also runs the Unlistenable radio blog at unwinnable.com. Do you want to tell us about your adventures on the blogosphere?
It's been a very interesting year. We're probably pretty much on our year anniversary of our original podcast, which is called Unlistenable. And it is predominantly a video game-based podcast. We do talk about a lot about games, but we have other segments. We have a phone number, so we try to encourage voicemails, which we receive on not a plentiful amount, but some very interesting ones.
Oh, that's cool. And you give out a number and people leave voicemails?
Yeah, we have email and a number so people could call and
Todd, I have an idea.
Yeah, it's fun actually sometimes to get the message.
Todd, I have an original idea, Todd. Movies Hate You needs a 800 number.
Or you could get, like, we use a Google Voice, you know.
Todd's sleeping, but make a mental note of that, Todd. Good night.
Okay.
We have our main broadcast, and then we have some other shows that we added to our audio network, which is we have a wrestling show called Unpinnable.
Nice.
Which we are doing the second episode on. We're recording it Monday, but it probably won't come out for a couple of weeks. And then we have a DJ show, which I created, called Unmixable.
Nice. I sense a pattern here. When does your podcast air?
Our latest one will come out tomorrow, actually, our latest episode.
So Monday.
Oh, well, to Fridays, actually.
Tricked you.
You did. Fridays,
so,
every...
So Thursdays.
Friday twice a month.
Okay.
Bi-weekly.
And they can just go to unwinnable.com and click on the Unlistenable banner and listen to the year's worth of episodes.
And you can find us on iTunes, or you can listen to it on the site.
iTunes, that's awesome. What Unwinnable, does that come from somewhere, or is that just a ironic statement about life? What is that? Does that come from a particular video game, a line? I know some people are obsessed with the bad translations in video games.
Yeah, it's kind of the scenario in games like King's Quest, where if you don't do something correctly, you make it to a point in the game where you can no longer progress. I know I played in Space Quest in the early ones. There was a couple of points where I did something incorrect, and then so you have to essentially restart the game, so it becomes unwinnable.
Huh. And what is the most unwinnable game ever?
I don't, you know, in even those games that kind of blocked you, you would have to restart it to win it. So offhand, I there's a lot of games out there. 50 Cent, Blood in the Sand, maybe. That's kind of hard to get through for a number of reasons.
And what is, and I'm assuming because of the website, you're on the cusp of what's happening and what's hot. Unlike Movies Hate You, where we're trapped in the past or the kind of purgatory of cinema, we're trying to break out of it. But so what's hot right now in gaming?
Skyrim seems to be a big hot game. People are looking forward to the Assassin's Creed games. I personally don't float into what everyone else plays. I do like sometimes my military shooters or my Grand Theft Auto type games. Right now I'm playing Saints Row, but You know, those seem like the big games. Skyrim really seems like a lot of people want to play that. And for those who don't know what Skyrim is, it's a third-person or first-person view open-world role-playing game. And, you know, similar to maybe a Warcraft, except it's not as online. It's really just you. You're not playing with a lot of people. So, you know, so you're fighting dragons and orcs and things of that nature, and you're farming and... That's a big investment of time. I don't have that type of time to sit in front of the tube and, you know, I want to get in, kill, leave.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. That sounds so dreadfully boring to me. I'm sorry. I couldn't play that. And, you know, when they were advertising that all over New York City, I thought it was a movie that was coming out because that's the way they advertise games now, or like movies. Like they have these posters where, you know, it just says the date of release. It doesn't say, you know, the best gaming experience you'll ever have. It just has like a, you know, picture of a guy with a sword and the name and then the date. And you're like, oh, cool movie coming out. I can't wait to see it. It's a damn game.
You know, the beauty of modern consoles is that games are now like an experiencing a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are very cinematic. They have great, great storylines. And, you know, it's something you could go back to and revisit constantly, where a movie, it comes out, you go see it, you got to wait a little bit, but you know, they're very immersive. They get you involved in it more, so, and I think that's why they market it even more so into a movie and a cinematic sense. You know, plus they have great visuals in it. I mean, they really do a lot of work on these games. They get well-known actors, they get well-known writers, directors.
Yeah,
it's a huge industry. It's massive.
The two are interchangeable, I think, depending, you know, based on the demographic they're trying to reach. Yep. So someone who would go see Clash of the Titans would also maybe buy Skyrim. So the fact that the advertising is similar is no surprise to me. You know, because if I see the poster for the new season of Spartacus, you know, on Stars, it looks like, you know, a gaming poster that I would see for, you know, a Spartacus video game.
Yeah.
I remember a few years ago when there was an Evil Dead game, I think, and
I remember that. Yeah,
Bruce Campbell to do a voice, and it seemed like a big deal at the time to get the original actor. Was that one of the first times they did that, or?
I wouldn't say they've used actors in games for a while, but I would say the Rockstar in doing Grand Theft Auto really. Yeah. You know, they got some, maybe not some high-tier actors, but some well-known ones at the time. I think Harvey Keitel was in a game when he was kind of on his uprise again, you know, during that Tarantino era. But, you know, that to me is the company that really integrated more professional actors as voice actors. And I think you started seeing that in cartoons, too, when Disney or Pixar or someone would come out with a cartoon movie, you'd see more well-known actors instead of just solely voice actors.
Yeah,
right. It used to be they would be voice talent. I mean, all the earlier Disney movies. I mean, they might have been stars in some respect, like Phil Harris or something, but they were more known for the voices and not, you know, it wasn't Miley Cyrus or somebody who just has a name value.
Yeah, that's a weird thing, because it doesn't always work. That just because you're a good stage actor or film actor doesn't mean you can do voice acting. And, you know, if you've ever had the chance to work with an actor who's, you know, just does films and then got them into a studio in front of a mic, it's a different experience. It's a different way to direct them. You know, the way you read for radio is completely different, or you know, a voiceover would be completely different than you would, you know, in a scene setting, you know, in a living room or something. So, yeah, I'm not sure that's always the best choice.
Yeah, one of the most extreme examples is the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies. They got, I think it's Aaron Carter, like a boy band singer, whatever, to do one of the Chipmunk voices, but they speed up his voice to make a Chipmunk voice, so it could be anybody's voice.
Right, they could have just paid some nobody to do it and save the money.
But they wanted his name in the credits, so I guess kids would go there because they want to hear Aaron Carter talk, but you don't hear him talk. You hear a chipmunk voice. So
there must be some call-outs to some of his songs or something, and there must be some hidden stuff in there for his fans, if he has any at this point.
What do you say? What,
now, Unwinnable, one of the things... Mr. Ree and myself were lucky enough to have shown up at something called the Geek Flea in New Jersey. And it's something that Unwinnable does now twice a year, Ken?
Twice a year. Well, yeah, the last year was our first two.
Your first two. So first two. Now you have, it's called the Geek Flea, and it's a geek flea market. It's not, you're not going to go there and get somebody's dirty old clothes or a box of stupid tools for a quarter. You're going to go there and you're going to get vintage video games, comic books, sealed stuff, DVDs, posters, all kinds of odd items, homemade items, custom figures, and just all kinds of great stuff. It's kind of like a, Diding on the Heaven flea market for geeks, or for, I should say, fans. Am I selling that correctly?
Yeah, no, that's good. I like that.
That's how I took it. It was just kind of like, when I'm there, I'm like, I want this to be like 10 rooms more of stuff. I just want to spend all my money here.
So did I.
There was a guy there that had the Misfits toys. Remember the Jerry Only? Yeah. And Frankenstein, yeah, he had the Misfits toy, the original Misfits toy there, and you don't find those when you just walk into a flea market. You go pay premium dollars on eBay for those.
And they were cheap.
They were at least 50% of what's being asked for. And that's the thing. Everything was reasonable. It wasn't like a bunch of dealers, these 50-year-old pot-bellied dirt balls that you see occasionally at these horror movie conventions and flea markets trying to sell you something, a $5 item for $30. These were just people, normal people off the street, fans, getting rid of stuff in their closet that they don't want anymore so they can buy more cool stuff. It wasn't about, I'm going to make money off of these people because they're fans. And you can tell that. The people that were there walking around, the people that were, quote-unquote, the dealers there, weren't those kind of dealers at all. And there's silence.
It was definitely a buyer's market. I mean, I wish I had brought a ton of dough. There's so many great things. Star Wars toys and videos and God, everything.
The next one is
March 31st.
So March 31st.
A little bit of ways. It's in Kearny, New Jersey. Let me bring up the address for you. The First Presbyterian Church of Arlington, 663 Kearny Ave, Kearny, New Jersey.
Well, wouldn't it suck if their address was 666 Kearny Ave?
I think about that every time I go there.
Wow.
And then we have an after party at the Loop Lounge in Passaic, New Jersey. So,
and that's complete. a rock punk.
Yeah. I think they do rock punk. They have DJs that DJ there. We'll have DJs at the Geek Flea. I might actually do a live unmixable at the Geek Flea. I'm still up in the air about that, but I'll have a table.
It just has a very cool, laid back feeling. It's not that
we're not trying to rape anybody. It's probably the better moments of some of the classic, conventions in the New York, New Jersey area. Some of the, all the different shows we've all been to. It has a good feel. Everyone's cool. No one's trying to rip each other off. There's food. There's music.
And there's food. It's like homemade food, homemade treats. Like it has a very DIY feel to it.
I'm glad you guys had a good time at it.
Had a great time. Yeah. Great time. I, you know that feeling when you first get to a show and you're like, you're the first people there, you got a pre-show ticket or some kind of nonsense, and you get in there and you're like, oh, I got the deals, or I'm getting this cheap. Or you're there on a Sunday and everything's like half price because people want to get rid of stuff. And that the Geek Flea was like that the whole time. It had the two best feelings of any convention. The very beginning, where you're just like trying to take it all in and you can't, and the end, where you're getting everything at a great price, all in one. Like the whole day was like that. It wasn't like, it was even, things were even cheaper at the end. People were like, I don't want to put this in my car. I don't have room in my house. I got it. And one of the other things that was great about this was, and I don't know anything about this culture, but I was fascinated by it. There were people that brought their own video game cabinets there with these homemade video games that they programmed. And they were like, I would say, you know, Atari and television level games, but they were unlike any other game you've ever played. It's like just bizarre, you know, out there, like I made this crap on mushrooms type video game. And those, you could just, you just play that for free all day if you wanted to.
That was Baby Castles Indie Arcade.
And they're in Williamsburg, right?
Baby Castles? Yeah, I believe they're in Brooklyn.
And they have kind of like an illegal arcade maybe or something. I don't know. I've heard stories about Baby Castles. It's like somewhere hidden. Like when you go into the place, it's somewhere like downstairs of a bar or something.
Yeah, some bootleg.
Yeah, it's like, they're not bootleg games. They're original games, but they're just...
They have them in crazy cases. I had like that one in the old Mac case.
Yeah.
With a big bat on it.
Yeah, just like, you know, the cabinet's like spray painted with the name of the thing. It just felt really cool to know people were doing that. It felt like, you know, the same way people go out there and make their own movies or make their own music and then just like put a cover together and sell it to you at a show for $5. It had that same feeling. I'm glad to see that I'm sure in comic books and the same thing happens, but to see it in a video game being a, you know, to me, not knowing anything about it, it would seem like something that took a lot of time and effort to do. It's not something you just like, you know, hey, I did a little song on my computer here.
That's how the old conventions used to be. I mean, I've been going to like comic book conventions forever, and some of the old Big Apple conventions were like that. Just very down to earth, a lot of handmade stuff. Couple of old wrestlers, couple of old TV stars hanging out, but very intimate, very up close. And
I miss that. I miss that, man. I miss that. I remember that. You know, I remember all the people that would just get a table and sit there with their movie they made, and it wasn't some studio or something. I hate going to conventions now, and it's like banners for like, you know, Monster Energy drink, and you know, oh, there's Anchor Bay, you know, like, you know, just like, you know, with like, you know, Hollywood releases, you know, it's been hijacked a little bit, and there's good that comes out of that too. I'm not trying to be down on it, because there are always people getting into this stuff that have never been to a convention, and they're entitled to experience that getting together with other fans. But the Geek Flea, run by Unwinnable.com, I thought really captured that old school feeling. And the only other convention I've been to in recent times, and Mr. Ree, you've been as well, is Cinema Wasteland in Ohio, or outside Cleveland, which is twice a year. I think they do something, it doesn't have that corporate feel that conventions have nowadays. Did you find that at Cinema Wasteland?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the Cinema Wasteland reminds me of what the chiller conventions used to be like. And not
right.
To knock, I mean, I love Kevin Clement and love what he's done with his shows, but they're a whole different animal now. I mean, they're huge, 150 celebrity guests, and everybody's charging $25 for an autograph, and toys are all overpriced. It's just a different thing. You know, God bless him. I hope he's making...
It's evolved over time, and it makes perfect sense to me. And I don't have to like it, or you know, I might long for those old days. But all that stuff we used to go there, we used to save up for months and go to these conventions and spend $300-$500 on whatever, rare tapes, toys, whatever, because before the internet, when you can get all this stuff on the internet, who cares? You can go somewhere and look at the same junk on a table and probably get it cheaper on the internet. You're not going to spend the money. So Kevin evolved with the Times and said, well, the one thing you can't buy on the internet is an experience with a celebrity. You can't buy that. You can buy their autograph, but you can't buy that 2 minutes of talking. I loved you in that movie. Shake my hand. Let me get a picture with you. I got that forever. You can't get that on the internet. So the conventions have, you know, done that. And because it's so guest centric now, is because, you know, what could you possibly bring to a show that I can't find cheaper on eBay or any site?
You know what else you can't buy on the internet? The smell of a barnyard and someone else's sweat wiping against you all day.
Yeah, that, unfortunately,
oh, I bet you can.
Unfortunately, that part of the convention scene never left.
No, it didn't.
I love it when you're out there in the tent, you know, and you're stuck with that stench, and you can't get through the crowd because it's like four people deep to get to like the guy who played Buck Rogers on NBC, you know, and it's like you're trying, and it's like, oh, if I could just get past him and get over to the Beastmaster, you know. there's the Iron Sheik. If I can only get to him and give him my $30, you know, if I could just get through this ass crack.
At least the tent was open. It's when you got stuck in those tight hallways.
Oh.
And the other downside is now anybody who's ever been on television ever thinks their autograph is worth $25. So, you know, they should be
Are they getting it though? You know what I mean?
They're getting it from somebody. I mean, they're probably not getting as many. You know, if they were charging $5, they might get more people.
But think about it from the fan's perspective. If I go to a convention, if I go to four conventions a year and I get all these autographs, the headliners kind of rotate, and every once in a while there's a new one. You're like, oh wow, okay, whatever. But it's kind of like you work down the line. It's like, well, I said, oh God, I've got all these guys' autographs. I might as well get an autograph with the person who was in Friday the 13th, the series. You know, I guess I can spare $25. No?
Yeah.
It's like movies. Like, once you've seen all the great movies that you wanted to see and everybody's talking about, and you start digging around for the obscure stuff. You start digging around for the stuff you haven't seen. And at some point in your life, maybe when you're like 70 years old, you'll just watch any crap that's on TV because you've seen everything.
Mm-hmm. I do that now.
Exactly.
I'm a big Land of the Giants fan, and years ago there was a Land of the Giants cast reunion of all the remaining cast, and I was very excited about it until I realized at $20 a pop, it's going to cost me, you know, $150, $160.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't just get one. I want all of them. Like, why would you want one of the cast when you can get them all? So I didn't get any.
Well, that poses the question. How much, I guess you're really not a Land of the Giants fan. That's the true test of a fan. You're not. You would have found a way to get those autographs.
You know, I'm a big Last House on the Left fan also. I have the book that was written, Making of Last House on the Left, at various times I got, you know, Wes Craven and Sean Cunningham and David Hasse and everybody. And then there was a chiller where they had the other three people, Fred Lincoln, Mark Scheffler, and Jeremy Rain. And I was very excited because I could sort of almost complete my collection, and I brought it in, and I put it, you know, waiting in line. They were in the tent, and I waited in line for 2 hours or whatever. I finally get into the tent, plop the book down, and without even looking up, they each sign it, and it's $20 a piece. So $60 for 30 seconds of interaction with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what? That's it?
Well, it's become a, you know, it's become a factory, you know, it's become cattle factory. It really has. But you knew going in that you were going to pay for those orders. You just think they were going to, like, oh, hey man, how cool, you got this book. Yeah, I'll sign it for free. I mean, they're there to make money. Their movie careers might not be what they were, or, you know, they might be trying to supplement their income with untaxable cash. You know, who knows why they're doing it. But we know that they're there to make money. They're not there to meet their fans like the way it used to be. Or the way it used to be, where a convention would pay somebody to come out and you would just sign, okay, I'm going to sign for 2 hours for free. It's part of my fee of you flying me out here. But if you were to do that with 100 guests, you'd go broke on the first show.
Mm-hmm. And the price seemed to go up every show. And
right. But what did you think? What did you think when you went to that table was going to happen? You weren't going to spend the $60, or you thought there was going to be one price for all three, or how did you? I'm just wondering. You're waiting in line. You know they charge for these things. What is the?
Sure. I think that at the time people were charging $10, and that was what.
Oh,
I was
thinking. Okay. Okay.
There was no sign on the table, and I put the book down, and first guy signs it and shoves it to the next person, and then he looks up at me and says, "That's $20." And I thought, oh, $20 for three autographs, that's not that bad. I mean, they're cutting me a break. But then 30, right? So I hand him a 20, and then Fred Lincoln says, oh, yeah, that's 20 for me, too. I'm like, seriously? 30 seconds to work there? You just made $60. And then I couldn't get Flash Gordon's autograph, who was at the next table, who I wanted also, because that was all the bread I had.
It's like when you're at the brothel, and you got to pay the extra $40. And what are you going to do? Leave? The bouncer's at the door. This guy's waiting to hit you over the head. And you're kind of stuck in this weird situation. You're in this pseudo-intimate situation. And it's like, oh, okay, you have to pay them or they're going to get the thugs.
Yeah, what can you do? What do you say? Cross out your autograph and all this.
Well, that's it. Yeah, that's it. I mean, if you were to say, hey, I refuse to pay that price. You don't have it listed. I mean, the guys could have said $100 and, they would say to you, well, why didn't you ask first, if they brought over security or something.
Yeah.
They've got you in a position. You're the, subservient in that position, in that situation with them.
Yeah. So, Ken, will there ever be celebrities at the Geek Flea?
Aside from Ken?
Well, we're all celebrities and unwinnable, so...
I meant second-tier celebrities.
Yeah, second-tier guys.
I don't know if that's a direction we really want to take. I think we like it that it's just kind of people selling either, their old stuff in their basement or stuff they're actually making. I think that's more the level we want to keep it at. I don't know if there's going to be a special guest this year. I think they're still planning that. I like the direction of getting Baby Castles and maybe getting like these little indie companies that do something special, and that might be the extent of what you see. Maybe down the line if we could get a bigger space, because as it is they're trying to cram like another 10 tables in there. Maybe then we could have bands play, or the initial idea was to have bands. There was an idea to even serve booze. But we thought we wanted to really make it more a family event. So we went a different route. It's been very successful. You guys had a great time. You guys, I want to tell you, your table is also in the video from Geek Flea 2 on our Vimeo site, which is just Team Unwinnable on Vimeo. And it's Geek Flea 2, the movie.
Awesome. Awesome.
We're, in some of the early footage
is that,
shot at
is
your
that,
table.
Is that the footage of me sitting there working and Lee with his feet up reading the paper?
Actually, you weren't at the table.
Oh. I must have been out buying stuff to resell for the table. Yeah.
You weren't at the table at the time, but when the camera wraps around, there's you and I are talking.
Ah, nice.
That was a meeting of the minds.
Meeting of the minds, man. Just like Vex back in the old days.
Oh, good old days.
What is?
Mention Vex here.
No, we didn't. I think we're running out of time, Todd, aren't we? He's sleeping.
You know, sir, we are about 3 minutes away.
Uh-oh.
Talk about Vex. Can you give me next time. Talk about Vex a little bit.
The three-minute bell, Todd. I wanted to ask Ken, though, what was the most collectible thing in his vast collection of collectibles. What is like the item? What is the grail? What do you got?
I've got tons of old G.I. Joe.
One item.
Oof.
Yeah. Like you're going to the desert island, you take one piece. What is it?
Oh, what would I take to the desert island? Wow, that's a hard one. I got too much stuff, man. I'd take my the G.I. Joe lamp I made, because that's
there you go.
Pretty badass.
That's not for sale.
I wouldn't be able to plug it in. No, it is for sale, actually.
It is for sale at the Geek Flea. And what's the date?
March 31st.
March 31st, 2012. Go to unwinnable.com to find out how to get there. And unless the church kicks them out because of the questionable content of the DVDs and the Misfits dolls there, they'll be there in March. Ken, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Awesome.
But I have to throw you out. But I want you to come back because we do. We have to talk about wrestling. And you should have Jimmy Snuka, by the way, at Geek Fleet. That's my suggestion. Maybe
Piper.
One.
Piper would be cool.
Yeah, Piper or Snuka. Just don't even announce them. Just have them sitting there. Just have them sitting there. Pay them. Here's $500. Just sit there all day and hang out and talk to people. And that's
it. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Totally awesome to just walk in and say, oh, there's Snuka, you know, walking around with a beer in his hand or something. Oh, no beer. Sorry. But there he is. You need to check out Ken Lucas. He's at unwinnable.com. You can read awesome geek-centric articles on video games, movies, comic books, knockoffs. That's coming. Ken's going to write that article after tonight.
I might have to.
You might have to. I need to see. I need a whole site of knockoffs. But get there to Unwinnable. Check out what he's doing. Check out what the whole gang there is doing. And check them out at the Geek Flea in March. You're gonna come back on before then, I hope so. Right before the show, come back on and we're going to talk about that again.
Pleasure.
Mr. Ree, and it was a pleasure having you, Ken. Mr. Ree, we didn't get to your movie reviews, and I'm sure everyone's upset about that, but we'll get them next time. Do you have any recommendations off the top of your head? Just a name? One name?
One name, David DeCoto.
David DeCoto, there we go.
Think about it, look it up, live it.
I'm seeing the numbers 13-13 in my brain, but we'll get to that next week. Thanks for sitting in, as always, Mr. Ree. Lee Peterson, the funniest man on earth, and Todd Sheets, our producer, our captain.
Yay, thank you.
Yay.
Thanks for your Batman insights tonight.
Always.
Appreciate it. And again, Ken, thank you. And we'll be crossing paths again. And we're going to come take over Unwinnable.
Totally.
On your podcast one night. And totally. I'll bring in Todd and Mr. Ree with me.
A threesome.
Yeah, a threesome.
A six-man tag.
A geeksome.
Now, if you did a porno show, what would you call it?
I would call it Shut Up, We're Out of Time.
Oh, okay.
Unjackable. Oh,
hey, yeah, unjackable. Nice.
That's not mine.
Oh, somebody came up with that already? Yeah, like these guys haven't sat around a table or at the diner over fries talking about what to call the porn version. I'm sure that's many a nights.
Wasn't my fault.
As long as you don't call it unedible.
Because we're always edible.
Untenable.
On this show, damn it.
Unrewindable. That's what we're going to call the VHS show.
We're going to call it, yeah. All right, we're out of time.
All right, Movies Hate You, movieshateyou@gmail.com, sponsored by B-Movie. Thanks for joining us. See you next time, geeks. Set it off. Hit the pause button.
Bring it down.